My guest today is Matthew Finup. He's the executive director for the Center for Economic Research and Forecasting called CERF, C-E-R-F. He replaced Bill Watkins, who was formerly a UCSB economic forecast director. Welcome back to Radio Real Estate, Matthew Finup.
Thanks for having me, Mark. It's great to be here.
Well, it's been a while. COVID hit, and you've been on a couple of times. I think I asked you at one time how exactly you got Bill fired so you could take his job. What did you do?
Well, actually, what I did is I introduced him to the fly fishing in eastern Tennessee, and then he departed shortly thereafter.
So you knew exactly how to get him out of there, and he bought an acre, and he came on a couple of times because he was still writing for a periodical and kind of keeping his toe in the water, but now his toe is in the water in the river, so...
That's right. Yeah, he bought an acre on one of the greatest trout streams in the eastern United States.
We should all
retire so well.
You gotta from your mouth to God's ears. So you have been busy, and you have a. I don't know if Dan was ever on. He's kind of like your co-conspirator. What's Dan's last name again?
Dan Hamilton is sort of our forecasting expert. So he actually is just a master of structural and inertial forecasting methods and also has a real expertise in economic measurement. Sort of one of our real strengths is that he really understands how things are measured. He understands government data programs broadly. And actually, how things are measured has a lot to do with forecasting.
I would think Dan Hamilton. So if he ever introduces you to some kind of a sport or relaxing retirement thing, be wary. It could be your days could be numbered.
Yeah, rock climbing. He shows me a great rock climbing destination. I'll be in trouble.
Exactly. So I remember contacting you around shortly after COVID hit. And you said that you were just so busy that you couldn't come on. What was happening? What was so chaotic in the aftermath of COVID hitting?
Well, I have to say, one of the things that was challenging as an economic forecaster is there was an obvious structural break, right? The models no longer apply. And so one of the things that we had to do immediately was start rebuilding the economic models, asking the basic question, how do you predict economic activity after this totally unforecastable shock and in the face of unprecedented government shutdowns of economic activity? That were the response to the COVID pandemic. So we started rebuilding the forecast models and actually had to change how we forecast. The sort of the bread and butter of economic forecasting houses is the quarterly economic forecasts, quarterly annualized GDP growth, for example. But in this case, this was obviously, we don't do a lot of high frequency forecasting, but this was an economic event where things were changing by the week and by the month. And so, for example, there was no way to forecast economic activity at the quarterly frequency, and we had to move rebuilding a monthly forecast model of economic activity. That was just one example. Obviously, too, we were dealing with the same displacement that so many others were, where we were trying to work from home, forecast from home, at the same time that we were helping our children attend school online. We were moving towards full-time online classroom instruction. Dan and I teach a master's in quantitative economics program at California Lutheran University. And so it was a wild time, absolutely incredible time.
When you say you don't do high frequency forecasting, does that mean like monthly forecasting? Is that what you meant?
Well, so you may be where, like, I'll hold up as sort of one of the most famous now. There's a high frequency forecasting program by the Atlanta Federal Reserve called GDP Now. And actually GDP Now nailed this most recent month's GDP, quarterly annualized GDP growth figure, 4.9%, when the consensus missed that substantially. So what they're doing is they actually have a quarterly forecast model, but then they're also exploiting data programs that arrive at much higher frequency. Many of those are monthly variables. And so they're actually continuously updating their quarterly model based on that more frequent, those more frequent data programs. And what's interesting is, but for over the last year, the high frequency models have not done well. You know, they have just incredible volatility in their forecasts, and there were some very big misses. But consumption data, which arrives more rapidly than GDP data, consumption data was really a driver of the most recent quarter's economic growth figure. And so Atlanta Fed GDP Now nailed this one.
That's very interesting. My guest, Matthew Fineup, he's the Executive Director of Center for Economic Research and Forecasting out of Cal Lutheran University, known as CERF, C-E-R-F. And too bad there wasn't a U instead of an E and an S, so you'd have CERF. But the website, if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, it's CLU for Cal Lutheran University, and then CERF, CERF.org. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And, you know, nobody forecasted, I mean, back in the 1920s, anyone forecast the stock market crash? And did anyone forecast a mass pandemic, a worldwide pandemic, rather?
Of course not, yeah.
So you've got these variables that just come out of nowhere. It doesn't happen too frequently. I mean, 2008, I imagine somebody was forecasting 2008.
Yes,
and
definitely.
Yeah,
a small minority of folks were. I would say the same thing about the inflation that we experienced in 2022. There were a handful of folks predicting, you know, inflation in the 9% range in 2022, even though the consensus wasn't.
And but was that they were able to do that after COVID hit? Though they were basing it on that.
Yep, you bet.
Okay, so that's understandable. So. What is the main bread and butter? I know you have been working on the view of the monetary policy and interest rate environment. What exactly is that, and what have you been forecasting?
Yeah, so interestingly, this is so people who know CERF and our forecast products may already be aware that we have a long-standing reputation going back to the Bill Watkins days of being very unconventional, you know, whereas there's, you know, characteristically a fairly bell-shaped distribution of economic forecasts of activity, right? Not only are we usually not anywhere near the mean of that consensus, we're usually way out on the tail of the distribution, at least since the financial crisis and the Great Recession. And what has driven that is, in our case, a really strong emphasis that we have placed on monetary policy as a driver of economic outcomes. So we have really been beating on this drum a lot since 2012, but even before that, and that is we recognize that the Fed undertook extraordinary, you know, not just unprecedented, like poorly understood, never before attempted interventions in the economy in the wake of the financial crisis. They did things like drive the short-term interest rate target to zero and then hold it at zero for a very, very long time. They engaged in quantitative easing where they bought trillions of dollars in assets in the hope of stimulating economic activity. And then one that we've placed a big emphasis on is that they started something unprecedented. For the first time in their history, they started paying banks interest on their reserves stored at the Fed as of the way of controlling the short-term interest rate in the absence of open market operations, you know, buying and selling small amounts of treasuries like they would have done historically. That's the QE. With QE, they sort of broke the system, and then they tried to rebuild it based on interest on reserves, IOR. And we saw that as, you know, really reducing financial intermediation. You know, reserves are usually lent out, and that's a critical source of credit for small businesses, for households. And interest on reserves incentivized banks to do much, much less of that lending, less of that financial intermediation. And so as a result of that, we saw that as a giant drag on economic activity. And so we were really ahead of the curve forecasting the very anemic economic growth of the decade following the financial crisis. And we really see the story today as really the sort of result of those that policy experimentation that was undertaken way back in 2008, right? The extraordinary situation right now in markets as not being so much a result of the Fed's failure to forecast inflation of 9% and then trying to catch up. We actually see this go, while they didn't, that it was a significant policy failure, we really see a lot of the turmoil today going back to those original decisions in 2008 and the inability to unwind those policies in 2011 and 2012. Right? The Fed has found it just cannot normalize monetary policy. And that results in, you know, things like a $9 trillion balance sheet that we saw during the pandemic. And that very naturally results in things like extraordinary inflation that we observed and which is now proving very, very, very stubborn.
My guest is Matthew Fineup. He's the executive director out of Cal Lutheran University, the Center for Economic Research and Forecasting, CERF, C-E-R-F. And you can go online to CLUCERF.org. Stands for Cal Lutheran University, CERF.org. Well, it's a lot to unpack. So obviously you said you go back to 2012 and even earlier, and this whole methodology the Feds were doing, you predicted and were correct. Where do you see it going forward? Are they still hanging on to those policies? Are they shifting?
Yeah, so it's very clear to us that the Fed doesn't have the, can't tolerate the jarring corrections that would be required to normalize policy. They first demonstrated this in October 2018 when Jerome Powell tried to normalize policy, announced that he was going to begin allowing the Fed's balance sheet to run off. And markets panicked. The S&P 500 shed over 19%. In a matter of weeks, and by the first of the year, Powell announced, "I didn't mean it. We're not going to normalize policy. We're going to maintain a large balance sheet." And of course, the markets were off to the races. In fact, from that December 24th low to the peak post-pandemic, the S&P grew 100%. Right, so we see that as they really reinflated the stock bubble, and then. The background to all this is you have to realize is that, I'm going to quote Thomas Holnig, who was a Kansas City Fed president, that an entire ecosystem is now developed around ultra-low interest rates, around a giant balance sheet. And the reality is moving to policy normalization is going to involve real pain, real costs. And so we question whether the Fed has the nerve to do that. And we see that right now. There's sort of this common narrative right now in reporting that the Fed is aggressively hiking interest rates. While we agree that the pace at which they have increased rates has been historically very, very, very rapid because they were so far behind forecasting the rise in inflation, they're playing this catch-up. But interest rates themselves are actually just sort of historically average right now. This is not a tight interest rate environment. So while the pace of increases has been rapid, they are, after adjusting for inflation, real rates are still very close to zero. So we see this as a highly stimulative monetary policy environment. In fact, some of the time-honored interest rate rules actually say the Fed's short-term rate should be closer to 7% right now if they hope to return inflation to their 2% target. And so we really see them as allowing inflation to run hot. We don't see that there's a real credible effort to get inflation under control. They're announcing now they may have reached the terminal interest rate. And so our forecast is for that stimulative environment to continue. That means well above average or well above target inflation for the entire forecast horizon, and it means a continuation of the extraordinarily anemic growth that we saw in the decade following the financial crisis. And so right now we're calling for a no recession, stagflation economy for the next 2 years. The only challenge is that that's also a very, very fragile economy. You know, when we look back at the banking crisis we saw earlier this year, as we tried to move away from that equilibrium around the zero rate, that we believe a lot of that fragility still exists in markets. And so that, unfortunately, means that even though we're predicting very low growth but no recession, that means that it wouldn't take much of an external shock to push the country back into a recession. But it will take an unforecastable shock, a geopolitical crisis, a major natural disaster, another pandemic, something like that.
But you are taking into account, of course, Ukraine and Russia and the Middle East and oil, or the country not being oil get independent.
Sure, you bet. So there, for example, actual U.S. involvement in one of those crises would likely to push us into recession. Activity around Taiwan would almost surely do that. But again, the story is that we believe we have a no recession, stagflation forecast, but that's around a very fragile economy that really couldn't absorb much of an external shock.
Right, and unforeseen external shock, and we've got a lot of shocks right now. I don't know what else could happen that's worse than what's happening now in the world.
Yeah.
It's just beyond.
Yeah. Yeah, so the flip side to all this is that we're actually really bullish on the U.S. economy in general. And so there's a great quote. There's a monetary economist named Jim Grant that really resonates with me. He says the U.S. economy is like U.S. innovation, not the U.S. economy, U.S. innovation, U.S. economic activity is like industrial weeds, right? Like you cut it, you try and cut it back, and it just keeps growing, right? That's sort of the nature of American innovation and American entrepreneurship. And so very often, we believe the U.S. sort of outperforms, but we also believe that policy matters, right? And so those are the two things in tension. And fiscal policy is crazy right now. Obviously, just interest payments on federal debt have increased something like 80% over the last year. Fiscal, we're continuing to run serial trillion-dollar deficits, even though unemployment's low and the economy's growing. So fiscal policy is crazy. Monetary policy, we've been beating on that drum since prior to 2012. That's bad. But there is just something unique about the American economy. And so interesting, in the most recent round of economic forecast surveys, we're part of the Wall Street Journal Economic Forecast Survey, there's still a number of economists predicting recession. There's still a number of economists predicting growth, no recession. And the consensus among the no recession people for Q1 and Q2 of this year was actually 1% growth, right? We were actually predicting 1.7% and 1.6% growth. So they were predicting 1.0, the no recession consensus, right? Actually even came in slightly above ours. And so we were actually optimistic in Q1 and Q2 of this year, and more optimistic than the consensus. But we do see long-term, really, the policy environment dominating, and we see a return to the just truly anemic growth that we suffered in the years after the financial crisis.
Hmm. Well, my guest has been Matthew Fineup. He's the Executive Director of Center for Economic Research and Forecasting out of Cal Lutheran University. Their website is CLUSERF, which is CLUCERF.org. And if you don't remember that, you just Google Cal Lutheran University Economic Research, and you'll find him there. Some good news. I hope you made a lot of money on the stock market when you see all this coming. It went up 100% there. I assume but you're still working for a living, so probably not. And then listen, again, be very wary of any suggestions from Dan Hamilton, your associate.
About where to live.
Stay away from rock climbing. Matthew Fineup, thank you so much for squeezing us in. I know you're just busy, and I appreciate your time, and say hi to Dan for me.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Matthew Fineup, Cal Lutheran University, and hopefully someday we'll get Bill Watkins on to talk about fly fishing. You're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, radiorealestate.com. There's a lot of disclosures sellers have to give when they sell a home, And one of them always struck me as an odd question. Do you have a meth lab? Have you ever used a meth lab in your house? That's one of the questions. And now a house is on the market, and lo and behold, we have a Breaking Bad house. Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, radiorealestate.com. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.